Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Thursday, October 2nd, and as the government remains shut down, the Department of War is being amped up. In case you haven't seen the full speech that Department of War Secretary Pete Hegseth spoke in front of a lot of military generals in Quantico, Virginia, the other day, it's really incredible, and he ends with an amazing prayer. But he railed against the woke DEI and says that there will be no more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses, no climate change worship, no division, distraction, or gender delusion. And I said, as I will say again, we are done with all of that. And so, of course, the left is overreacting because he is basically taking the Department of War shot right at the heart of what the left cherishes most, denying reality, right? And so the Guardian's headline is "Veterans React to Hegseth's Insulting Address to Generals and Admirals." New York Times is "Hegseth Lectures Military Brass on Woke Leaders' Fitness and Grooming." ABC is "Hegseth rails against woke, lays out standards." Oh my gosh, standards, as if, in speech to top generals. And Newsweek says Hegseth tells top generals to prepare for war. And Washington Post opinion, at least they label it this one, "Trump and Hegseth's backward-facing message to the generals." So everybody is up in arms against the Department of War. But I think it's fantastic. And I'm sure that my good friend Todd Starnes, who is host of the Todd Starnes Show and author of Twilight's Last Gleaming, agrees with that. Todd, I just think this is fantastic. Good morning.
Jenna, I do too, and I'm just glad that he didn't announce that he was banning fat news anchors. Then I may have an issue. But I love this idea of saying no fat generals and no woke troops. Look, the military is getting back to its original mission, and I love the name change. I think that really signifies where we are and where President Trump wants the military to go and what he wants the military to be. And, you know, when you look at the wokeness that infected the military, you have to go all the way back to the Obama administration. And there were a lot of stories done at the time, Jenna, about this purge of generals and flag officers, nearly 200. It was the largest number of generals ever fired by a president. And one of the reasons why a lot of people were speculating, why did Obama do that? Why did he fire all of those generals? Well, those generals were very conservative. You might even call them gun-toting, Bible-clinging, flag-waving generals who loved this country. And they were purged from the military, and they were replaced by a bunch of far-left woke folks like, for example, General Mark Milley. So that's really where all of this started. And President Trump is undoing really a generation now of wokeness within the ranks.
And as he should. I mean, this is something that I think we have been waiting for a long time, as we saw through, as you mentioned, the Obama era, but even through the last 4 years of Biden, where we had, you know, the nuclear scientists out there in red lipstick and dresses. We had an admiral who identified as a woman and wore a dress. I mean, it's not only ridiculous denying reality, but it's also embarrassing on the world stage, because when we're trying to strike fear in the hearts of our enemies, or at least project strengths when the president needs to negotiate an end to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, when he's now laying out this, 20-point peace plan between Israel and Gaza. And then you have the military behind him with dudes in dresses and trans people and, people who can barely lift anything but a fork to their mouth. I mean, it's embarrassing. And so this is actually requiring some standards. And standards are completely against the leftist ideology because standards require something objective and it requires a measurement of merit instead of merely identity. And so what do you think is going to be the response here from the left, other than these outrageous headlines? I mean, should we expect lawsuits over this? I mean, are we going to see the dude in the dress say, I got fired here and this is wrongful termination from the military? How dare they?
Yeah, I don't think so, Jenna. I think that, when you're dealing with the military, you're dealing with an entirely different creature. And I think that we are going to see total and full compliance within the ranks. And by the way, that also goes for grooming. Hegseth really laid down the law yesterday, and it was quite remarkable. It was interesting. I was hosting a show last night on Newsmax, and I had a panel, and they were both very conservative guys, but they were really pushing back on Hegseth. They wanted more details on, how he was going to, repair the military. But also they were really upset that he had a dressing down of the generals in public. I had to push back on that assessment because I think the administration is sending a message to the rest of the country and really the rest of the world that this is a new day and that you should fear the U.S. military. We are a peaceful people, but we wield mighty power, and we will use that if we are attacked. So I think there were multiple messages that were being sent out as a result of yesterday's dressing down.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And I'm talking with Todd Starnes, who is a Newsmax host, radio host, and author of many books, including Twilight's Last Gleaming. You can get that wherever books are sold. And I agree with you that that this kind of dressing down publicly was very warranted because we've seen for too long, even going back to the beginning of President Trump's first administration. You mentioned Mark Milley. And a few others, at the top that really didn't abide by the chain of command and actually thought that they were superior to Donald Trump because he doesn't have military service, as if that's some kind of constitutional requirement for being the president. And so this kind of dressing up to me sort of put back the military order and saying, and for those who have criticized very openly Pete Hegseth, who, even though he does obviously have military experience, just calling him, well, he's just a Fox News host, as if, the last job that he carried is the extent of his entire resume. And that's, of course, what the left likes to do. But it's a reminder that, hey, these positions are important. There is a chain of command. And so I agree with you, Todd, that that's really important. And hopefully the military got that message, do you think?
Well, I hope so. And I'm glad you brought that up because not only is he a decorated military hero who had the rank of major, served in the U.S. Army and then the Army National Guard for a number of years. He's received he's the recipient of two Bronze Stars, among other awards. And also, they dismiss the intellect of Hegseth. Jenna, here's a guy who went to Princeton University for his undergrad and went to Harvard for his graduate studies. So we're talking about a very intelligent person who has served his country. And it's really sad when they, they dismiss him as some sort of a TV host. Well, he just happens to be a TV host at the number one cable news channel in America. So this guy is all about winning. This guy is all about excellence, and that's what he's trying to do in the military. And it really bothers me when people try to belittle Hegseth like they tried to do last night on Newsmax.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think he deserves a lot more respect for that, not only as the Secretary of War anyway, which the position itself just deserves respect. Obviously, we can critique and criticize leaders, but we should be doing that in a way that's actually reasonable. But what did you also make of the only headline that I thought was a little bit just a straight shooter, not trying to pile on the outrage over the anti-DEI, but Newsweek saying that Pete Hegseth tells top generals to prepare for war. He said that from this moment forward, the only mission of the newly restored Department of War is this: war fighting. And he said, preparing for war, preparing to win, unrelenting and uncompromising in that pursuit, not because we want war, no one wants war, but because we love peace. A lot of the leftists now are suggesting that, this means that Trump is going to start a lot of wars and we're going to start invading. I didn't take it that way at all.
No, not at all. And look, here's the deal. That's the role of the military. They're always supposed to be preparing for war. You never know when hostilities are going to break out, and you've got to be ready. So, I commend Hegseth for saying what he said. I also think raising the standards, especially for combat troops, that all combat troops, male or female, must rise to the level of the male training regimen. And I think that is vitally important. And, of course, I've always had an issue with women on the front lines of combat. I don't think that's where they should be. And, I'm glad to see the administration addressing that.
Yeah, absolutely. As a woman, and I know what a woman is, and I know you do too, Todd, because we live in reality and we acknowledge that. I agree 100% with that as well. And so just in the last couple minutes I have with you, you're newest book is Twilight's Last Gleaming, Can America Be Saved? I think in the midst of all of this that we're seeing, especially with Hegseth's powerful speech, that's the pertinent question right now. Can America be saved? So tell us about your new book.
Well, the newest book is called Star Spangled Blessings, Devotions for Patriots. And it's a collection of daily devotions where we explore the faith of many of our founding fathers, and going all the way from Revolutionary War time to modern day, and encouraging people and reminding them about why and how God has blessed America. But Twilight's Last Gleaming is really a for such a time as this moment. Right before the election, I sat down with President Trump at Mar-a-Lago for a very long interview. And the interview led to this book, talking about how we can sustain the America First movement in this country, Jenna, because the work that has to be done to undo all of the damages is really going to take more than one administration. So Twilight's Last Gleaming lays out the path forward for freedom-loving patriots.
Amazing. And that's everything that we need to grasp a hold of right now and move this forward, especially in the midst of a lot of cultural conflict right now, but I think a lot of encouragement from our top executives, especially with what we saw, including Secretary Hegseth at Charlie Kirk's memorial. I mean, what an amazing declaration of the gospel. So Todd Starnes, thanks so much. And you can follow him on X at Todd Starnes. Of course, see him on Newsmax as well as his radio show as well. So really appreciate you joining. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we're talking about all of these newly imposed and I think really fantastic standards from the Department of War and Secretary Pete Hegseth, what does this actually look like in terms of the qualifications for the military? It seems like there's going to actually be some rigorous physical requirements and some of these other things that, again, I think are just great in terms of military readiness and standards. So let's talk about this more with Raw Egg Nationalist. He is Charles Cornish Dale, but goes by Raw Egg Nationalist, is an author, a prolific writer on all things health and wellness. And so, Raw Egg, thanks so much for joining. And, you know, your thoughts overall on Secretary Hegseth's speech from Quantico and what this actually means for military readiness.
It's great to be back speaking to you, Jenna. So, yeah, it was that was a very, very encouraging speech, I thought. A common sense speech, a speech grounded in practical reality. I mean, look, there's a famous saying, famous maxim, a motto, lead by example. And it's true, I think, in any situation. It's true whether you're talking about a bureaucracy, corporation, government in general, of a sports team, or especially the military. And I think that for too long we've seen actually a decline in standards across the board, but particularly in terms of leadership, particularly in terms of political appointees. And this is a return, I think, to common sense. I mean, you know, the Department of Defense has been renamed the Department of War because with Pete Hegseth and with Donald Trump, with the broader admin and the agenda, then what they want to do is they want to go back to basics across the board. And with the Department of Defense becoming the Department of War, what that means is actually preparing America's military to do what the military does, which is to fight and win wars. And you know, you can't expect the highest standards from the rank and file if you don't also demand the highest standards from the upper crust, from the officers, the right up to generals. And Pete Hegseth said, look, you know, it's disgraceful to see fat generals and admirals walking around the Pentagon. And we're not going to do that anymore. But what I think is interesting as well, actually, is that this may also be a way potentially to clear out some more partisan members of the upper hierarchy of the military. I think this is a good way, potentially, you know, imposing fairly rigorous fitness standards, perhaps, that apply also to the top brass. That would be a good way, actually, to get out some of these partisan people who maybe have made their way to the top, not because of their competency as leaders, but because of their ability to toe the right political line. We'll see. But I think even if that doesn't happen, then this is definitely a move in the right direction. It's a move towards accountability and true leadership, I think.
Yeah, and I love what you said about actual competency instead of just ideology, because you know, there is a standard of fitness that should be required for something that is so intensely physical, like military activity. I mean, this makes sense. It's not just that, you know, Trump world and Secretary Hegseth just want, you know, people who are fit for, you know, optics reasons, like, you know, advertising or recruitment or something. I mean, this is actually a very physically demanding job. And so when you have people like, you know, Admiral Rachel Levine, who was previously the health secretary in Pennsylvania, who just looks, frankly, morbidly obese, looks unhealthy, looks like, you know, he doesn't care about anything, goes by, you know, the status of a woman. I mean, it's just so departed from reality. And then is promoted within the Biden administration to be one of, you know, the top officials. It really makes a mockery of what the military is all about. And so you can tell that it is very ideologically driven when the demands of the job are undermined in favor of putting people there who clearly aren't there meritoriously, but just because of ideology. So how is that going to change? And what would you say, you know, to the critics who say, well, you know, this is just going to be bigoted against, you know, people who maybe, especially women, for example, you know, sexist, who just can't measure up to some of these physical standards?
Well, what I think is interesting, too, is, you know, you have to look at Pete Hegseth himself. I mean, he's a veteran and he's in great shape now. And not that long ago, a few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago, he set a challenge with RFK Jr., a push-up and pull-up challenge. I think it was 100 push-ups and 50 pull-ups in 5 minutes. And, you know, you can't do that if you're a slouch. And he did it, and RFK did it, and other, you know, members of the senior members of the services and the administration did it. You know, it's a personal demonstration. And I think you can see, actually, when you look at the response of the rank and file, when Pete Hegseth speaks, when he addresses the troops, when he talks about, you know, the essential function of the military being war fighting, being able to fight, being competent, he gets a rapturous response. I mean, it really does work, you know, actually embodying the values of the military, even the Secretary of War or the Secretary of Defense as before. And, you know, there couldn't be a greater contrast, I think, between Hegseth and Lloyd Austin, for example. You know, there are these hilarious pictures of Lloyd Austin inspecting troops during the pandemic, wearing a face mask and a plastic visor across his face. And, you know, he's a massively overweight man. I mean, it was a ridiculous image. But yes, I mean, there are critics of this policy, of course, and they'll say, like you said, oh, it's bigoted, it's unfair. But actually, if you go back and watch Pete Hegseth's speech, he doesn't say that women shouldn't serve in the military. All he says is women should be held to the same standards as men. There should be high standards across the board. And actually, if men don't live up to those standards, they don't get to be in the military either. So what it's about is it's about maintaining a uniformly high standard, not making exceptions on the basis of political correctness, and ensuring that actually the military, which, you know, ultimately has to defend America and fight its wars, is as competent as possible. So, I mean, I think, yeah, you're going to get political criticism, I think, of this, of these changes. But actually, I think for the majority of people, it obviously makes sense. If you ask the average man on the street, you know, should the military have the highest physical moral standards, they would say yes. And that's just what Pete Hegseth is trying to do. He's trying to make that the priority, competency above everything else.
Mm-hmm. And we totally applaud him for that. I think that this is timely in the military. It's the right thing to do. Standards are always good. And it's always about competency and being able to have whatever it takes for the particular job or line of work that you're in. And that's across the board. It's not just in the military. It's in, you know, every other line of work. I mean, this is why, you know, there are people who are in other lines of work that I wouldn't be qualified for. And that's okay. You know, right? It's not that everybody deserves to an equal shot at everything. That's not what equal opportunity actually means in this country. But, you know, not to get too far down that rabbit trail, but I do want to turn to another topic, Raw Egg Nationalist, my special guest this morning, because, you know, in the midst of all of these great wins and things that we're lauding about the Trump administration, the Secretary of War, President Trump, in a recent press conference this week with HHS Secretary RFK Jr., the vice president, and a few other leaders, they're talking about, you know, where, you know, we're going with some of these other health initiatives. He had a conversation about Pfizer and said this: I'm honored to have Albert Bourla, who is talking about here. He's done a fantastic job with COVID. He did a fantastic job with a lot of things. He's a leader, and Pfizer is right at the top. There was a lot of pushback to this when he's now, you know, entering, my understanding, he's entering into some kind of, you know, deal with Pfizer yet again. And there were a lot of commentators, including doctors, you know, who had to put their own licenses on the line in the midst of the mandate for the COVID vaccine, seeing that, you know, the liability shields for companies like Pfizer. And, you know, one commentator who we've had on the program, Mary Talley Bowden, said that this was a slap in the face to all of the people injured and killed by Pfizer. That was her commentary. And she said, really heartless and disrespectful of the president. You know, your thoughts overall on why Trump would still openly be working with Pfizer and other companies, for other things, obviously. But, you know, this really does seem like he's not playing to his base very well.
Yeah, I think it's definitely unfortunate. I mean, a lot of people, for good reason, do not like Albert Bourla or Pfizer, and they remember everything that happened during the pandemic, all of the dreadful things that happened, and all of the dreadful things that are still happening, because we're still finding out. You know, last time we spoke, I talked about a new scientific study that came out that showed that mRNA, that genetic material from the Moderna vaccine, had been found inside the genome of cancerous cells in a woman's body for the first time, and that this was a clear suggestion that actually mRNA vaccines, probably the Pfizer vaccine too, is causing cancer. It is being integrated into people's genomes, as was warned during the pandemic. But those warnings weren't heeded, and then tens of millions of people were given this, experimental treatments. So, I mean, people are rightly suspicious of Pfizer, or worse, they're angry. They want some kind of justice, I think, really is only the right word for it, for all of the mistakes that were made. I mean, Trump is in a difficult position because, of course, he led Operation Warp Speed, and I think he's still proud of it. He said he's still proud of it, and I don't think that Trump has personal responsibility for. I think he was misled, basically. I mean, he's not a medical expert. I think he was misled by the people around him, but there is at least a counterbalance in RFK Jr. And so, yes, I mean, we can just look at what Trump said, but we also have to look at what RFK Jr. is doing. And there has been a fundamental change to the way that the COVID vaccines are being treated by the HHS, by health administrators. They've changed the recommendations so that now it's only people over 65 and people with comorbidities who are being recommended the vaccine. It's coming off the childhood vaccine schedule. So there are beneficial changes, I think, but that are taking place with regard to the COVID vaccines that will make Americans healthier and safer. But nevertheless, I think still, yes, there is a desire to see some sort of justice meted out for the mistakes of the pandemic. And certainly, yes, I can see why people are angry that Trump was so warm towards Albert Bourla. Yes, I can see that totally.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, and you know, and this deal had nothing to do with the COVID vaccine. This was a deal announced to lower some drug prices, you know, among other things. He announced Trump RX or Trump prescription for discounted prescriptions and, you know, some things. And people are talking about how Trump's pharmaceutical tariff threat loses some of its edge after the Pfizer deal reassures some of Big Pharma. But really, it was more the complimentary specifically of how Pfizer handled COVID that I think really just struck a lot of people the wrong way when, you know, we're still dealing with a lot of these effects. So overall, just in the last couple of minutes I have with you, Raw Egg Nationalist today, and you can follow him on X on social media, read a lot of his work in the National Pulse and other publications. You know, what does this portend then for Big Pharma overall? Because we are seeing that counterbalance with HHS and RFK Jr., but Trump continues to just always be ready, I think, to make a deal with anybody. And it's about today. It's not about yesterday. That's his mentality, which, you know, makes sense in some of these circumstances. But overall, what does this portend for Big Pharma?
Yes, it's not. I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether the administration really is pulling in two different directions or whether it's just Trump being Trump and, you know, sort of trying to make deals and trying to get people around the table to sit down to make changes. I mean, obviously, RFK Jr.'s MAHA agenda, Make America Healthy Again agenda, at its most radical, is basically a direct frontal assault on Big Pharma and on Big Pharma's level of control over society and the dependence of ordinary people on Big Pharma. So, I mean, at some point, I think, I mean, we're only in early days now with the Mahar agenda, and there have been some significant wins. But what we haven't seen is apart from things like the changes to the vaccine schedule, which have obviously gone down badly with vaccine manufacturers, including Pfizer and Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, we haven't seen any kind of real fundamental challenges yet to Big Pharma. And hopefully we're going to see some big changes to the way, for instance, that drugs are regulated. That's something that RFK Jr. has spent, you know, decades of his life talking about. You know, there need to be changes to the way that drugs are regulated, that we don't do enough testing, that, you know, that basically the regulators, the FDA, etc., are in bed with Big Pharma, and there's, you know, exchange of personnel. During the pandemic, we saw that regulators from the FDA who approved the Moderna vaccine went to work at Moderna fairly shortly after leaving the FDA, within months. So, I mean, we know what RFK Jr. wants to do, and I think we know what he should do, which is to rebalance the relationship between Big Pharma and the American people in favor of the American people, because it's very much in favor of Big Pharma at the moment. But yes, I mean, I think we're only really going to know if there's a real division in the administration when that sort of thing starts to happen. I mean, Trump has pulled RFK Jr. back a little bit on the vaccines, and he made some comments recently where he said, look, I think some vaccines definitely work. Although, you know, in that autism announcement, then Trump went pretty hard, actually, linking autism to the vaccine, risk of autism to the vaccine schedule. So it's difficult to tell. I mean, there are a number of different paths. We could have a fairly radical path, we could have an extremely radical path, or we could have a path where actually these entrenched interests win out. And at the moment, it's not really clear which we're going to get.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on all of this, and hopefully this will at least go in the direction of accountability for Big Pharma, not a lot of these, you know, liability shields and some of these other things, as the administration is, I think, rightly trying to reduce some prices. And you know, there's always kind of this natural tension. So, you know, always really appreciate your analysis, Raw Egg Nationalist. And, you know, we'll kind of see where Trump and especially with RFK Jr. Go from here. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, in the midst of everything going on in the culture and in all of the confusion, all of the lies from the left and all of the ways that we need to respond as Christians with the truth, a lot of us are stepping up to say we need to do even more after our good friend Charlie Kirk was just brutally murdered and assassinated. This is not going to stop the Christians from proclaiming the truth of the gospel of Christ. And we will continue to carry on that mission as we had even with Charlie and in partnering with him in his mission. But now, especially that he has gone home to be with the Lord, I feel certainly an even more intense drive to use every opportunity that I have. And as Ephesians 5 says, to take advantage of every opportunity because the days are evil. And one of those opportunities is with my very dear friend, Alex McFarland, who is host of Exploring the Word right here on American Family Radio and is just a wonderful apologist for Christ in apologetics. And Alex, there is an upcoming event that you and I and a few others, you've been so kind to invite me this Friday and Saturday. So let's talk about that.
Well, thank you, Jenna. It's great to be on with you. And hey, listen, I know I speak for millions of listeners, but thank you for your news and analysis and your legal knowledge and your scriptural knowledge. The Jenna Ellis Show blesses millions of listeners every single day, myself included. And I just want to say kudos for the work you do.
Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, likewise, I think it's so important as, you know, so many are just, I mean, I have mixed emotions always, you know, every day since Charlie's murder. I have been more emboldened, but I've also been disheartened, you know, kind of simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But carrying forward our work and, you know, you do that so mm-hmm. well, and it'll be such a great opportunity this coming weekend.
Well, it really will. And you're going to be there. By the way, this is October 3 and 4, folks. In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we have done a series of conferences there because there are a lot of theaters. It's kind of almost like Branson, Missouri or something. But we've rented quite a number of the music theaters down here, and we've done a number of events, and we've had, you know, Dinesh D'Souza and different speakers. And yes, 3 weeks ago had Charlie Kirk just shortly before his very tragic murder. But Friday, October 3rd, which is just a couple of days away, and this series, Jenna, we call it Conversations That Matter. Conversations That Matter. And what we're going to do, we're going to have a panel discussion about the state and future of our nation and the state of the church. Jenna Ellis will be there. Donald Trump's nominee for ambassador for religious freedom, Mark Walker, will be there. A fantastic young thinker and voice, Caleb Collier of the Church and State broadcast. He's on NRB television. Caleb Collier from Seattle, Washington, is coming. And then there is a local pastor. He is he had a career in the music industry, and his name is Steve Fairchild. But he started a church called Low Country Community Church, and it is just blowing up. They're reaching so many people, reaching so many young people. And I really think Steve Fairchild is one of the young, you know, people in ministry that it has his finger on the pulse of how to reach millennials, Gen Z, and younger. But we'll talk about what can we do as Christians and as citizens to move forward and to be a blessing to our nation. But, Jenna, I got to tell you this. Over the years, I've booked a lot of people. We've done 51 major worldview apologetics events all over the country. We had Chuck Colson, a great leader, just before he died. We had James Dobson. Lot of great people. But, you know, a month ago when we had Charlie Kirk, who was a friend of mine, and I know he was a friend of yours, it was special. I mean, Charlie and I shook hands on this event October of last year, and then we really solidified the dates. It's funny, he was going to do Saturday, August 23rd, and then he proposed Friday, August 22nd. And then he proposed Thursday, August 21, which was the date that we did, because he said, I got to get home for my daughter's third birthday. Mm-hmm. And I said, no problem. So that was the date we did. And we had people come from 17 states to hear Charlie Kirk. But off stage and on stage, and by the way, over the weekend, Donald Trump tweeted the video of our event. The real Donald Trump. Trump tweeted the video of our event, and he said everybody should hear this speech. Mm. But Charlie had said, if somebody kills me, please don't go silent. On stage, he said this, but he also said it backstage. He said, look, if something ever happens to me, please keep on keeping on, everybody. And Jenna, we're living in a time when the truth has become contraband almost, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, you know, what a remarkable legacy and example and faithful witness and testimony Charlie has left for us. Dr. Dobson, Chuck Colson, John MacArthur, Vadi Bakum. I mean, you know, all of these really, you know, heroes of the faith. I mean, so many more. And it really is a moment in time, like it always has been, though, Alex, in the church age. I mean, we have, since the moment of Christ's ascension, been looking forward to his return. And, you know, these issues of this spiritual battle between good and evil are not new. They just may be new and different and for each of us, because this is our moment to live in our time in history that God has appointed for us to wage this war and understand that spiritual battle. And so, you know, moving forward, I really commend you for continuing these conversations and to not being intimidated or to falling silent, but saying, you know, this is spurring us on even more to have the difficult conversations and to provide the answers, not just for our faith as if this is some, you know, kind of just belief system, but, you know, you and I were talking a little bit before you came on during the break. I'm reading, you know, for probably the second or at least, if not more, time, Finding Truth by Nancy Piercy, and talking about how the Christian worldview, and this is the quotation, what is being communicated is an accurate description of reality, not a belief system about it. This reality orientation is the positive intellectual climate in which the core propositions and events of the gospel live and breathe. It is a mentality in which people are liberated by verifiable truth to challenge tradition, question power, and fight for life and healing against death and decay. And I just thought that puts so beautifully exactly what we're trying to do here.
Amen. You know, Jenna, you've done a lot of media, and so have I. It's interesting. Sometimes I'll be on, like, national media, and whenever there's, like, a Christian happening, they'll refer to Christians as, quote, the faithful. Mm-hmm. Or they'll say, you know, people of faith. And I think that they'll say, you know, the faithful gathered at such and such. And it's almost like there's this assumption, you know, Christians are just kind of people who believe stuff. Well, and I like what you said of that Nancy Piercy quote. No, Christianity is reality. And you know, when we say, you know, God exists, Christ paid our sin debt on the cross, Christ rose from the dead, these propositional statements are truth. It's not just what I believe. I mean, the Lord Jesus was the risen Savior way before I ever came along. So, yes, I believe it, and we put our faith in Jesus. But, no, you've got it. I mean, this is the accurate description of reality, that we need Christ, we are saved by our faith in Jesus and what he did on the cross. And so it's not just merely, well, you know, it's like 2 Peter 1:16. Peter says this, "We have not followed cleverly devised fables when we made known unto you the power and the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ." And so people need to understand that, you know, Christianity is not my, you know, wishful thinking. No, this is reality. And his forgiveness is appropriated to us once we respond and put our trust in Jesus. And so I've said this, and I think it's worth repeating, that Christianity is the only faith system that bases its claims and its promises on evidential data that can be investigated. That's why somebody like my friend Lee Strobel, who was a journalist, but he has a law degree from Yale, he was compelled by the evidence. That's why J. Warner Wallace, a close friend of ours, who he was a renowned, you know, cold case homicide detective from Los Angeles, he was an atheist into his 50s. But he looked at the evidence. Some friends that were believers in the police force challenged him. And Jim Wallace, Lee Strobel, Chuck Colson, also with a law degree, you know, one of the most renowned literate people of the 20th century, C.S. Lewis, who, by the way, his 70-year-old textbook on medieval literature was just again reprinted and is still used. C.S. Lewis, brilliant guy.
And people like that have said, okay, wow, this is real. This is really true. I think about my mentor in grad school, Jenna, was a guy named Norm Geisler. Mm-hmm. Brilliant guy, PhD from Michigan. Michigan State, I believe it was. No, Loyola. I'm sorry. Norm had his PhD from Loyola. And he was friends with one of the greatest historians of all time, a man named Will Durant. And Will Durant got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, I think, in like 1978, because he did a series called The Story of Civilization that has been called one of the most important works of history in history. But Norm was friends with Will Durant, and Will Durant, before he died, became a Christian because he said the most well-attested life of antiquity is Jesus. We have more information about Jesus than any other figure. And if we discount Jesus, said Will Durant, then we also have to discount the top 100 names, Aristotle, Julius Caesar, the names of antiquity for which we have far less authentication. And I guess my point is, if somebody's considering, wow, is this gospel stuff real? Should I really put my trust in Jesus? Absolutely. We put our faith in Jesus, but it is a faith corroborated by compelling lines of evidence. And like Charlie challenged us and others have given a great example, I mean, this is our time. To everybody listening, Jenna, I just want to say this. More hangs on our obedience than we could possibly imagine. I mean, think about this, folks. Your witness, your voice, your representation of the gospel to those around you could change somebody's eternity. And the Bible promises us in 1 Corinthians 15:58 that our labor in the Lord is not in vain. So let's do this. And we're going to do our best on Saturday morning, October 4th, to equip people. It's a free apologetic seminar. Jenna, you'll be speaking Friday night, October 3rd, along with others, and then on Saturday morning, 8 to 11, we have to be out of the theater by 11 a.m. because they've got a big production that night. But we have a free seminar, and we're going to go over how you can share your faith confidently in any situation. And the same content that I teach at Liberty University and all around the country, we're giving it's free. Now, if I can get my website, it's just alexmcfarland.com. We need you to register. It is completely free, Friday night, October 3rd, Saturday morning, October 4th, and it's in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at the Greg Rolls Theater. Super good, state-of-the-art, absolutely state-of-the-art theater, plenty of parking, easy, right off of Highway 17, but Jenna, don't you think that when people get equipped and they get excited and they get confident, that's when every Christian can really make some fruitful impact for the gospel?
Absolutely. And that's why I'm so grateful to be part of this event, and I really appreciate the invitation, Alex. I was telling you offline when you called me that, this was really an answer to prayer for me, because as much as I absolutely love doing this radio broadcast every morning, and I have, I'm part of my local church, I was praying in the wake of Charlie's death that the Lord would give me even more opportunities to speak truth for His glory and to win as many people to the truth as we possibly can, and also encourage believers already who may not feel the boldness and think, well, I can't pick up Charlie's microphone. I can't debate as well as he can. I can't, do all of these things. Well, yes, you can. And, the way that Charlie did all of this was through reading more and more by having mentorship. You need people like Alex in your life. He's in my life as a mentor. You need, mentors in your life. You need to be part of a local church and get involved wherever you can. So these events are so important to give Christians especially, encouragement to say now is the time and we have to take advantage of every opportunity because the days are evil. So go to alexmcfarland.com/conversations and you can be a part of this. It will not be live streamed, but we want you to attend there in person. So make sure you're doing that October 3rd at 7 p.m. and then October 4th that Saturday at 8 a.m. Alex, thanks so much. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net. Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.